Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 24th of September, 2021. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. And your readers today are Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Barbara Kearns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are Crunch Decision Delayed, Opposition Grows to MOD Plans for Base, and public against park power. I think we're getting a lot of community opposition. Anyway, here's the first. Crunch decision delayed. A key decision over controversial plans for a multi-storey car park on the edge of Winchester was postponed at the last moment. The City Council Planning Committee had been set to decide on Monday a second proposal for the Voltex site off Barfield Close in Bar End. But a solicitor's letter sent at 10:35 a.m. that morning persuaded councillors to postpone the meeting. Senior legal officer Catherine Knight told the committee that the council had published fresh papers about their plans for a 287-space car park. We received the letter from objectors' solicitors asserting they had insufficient time to consider their responses. Ms. Knight said the council disagreed, but in the interest of fairness had agreed to defer the matter. The letter said, "The council has produced a very large number of late documents. While some of those respond to material which the council had for between 9 and 14 days, the increase in the height of the scheme is unrelated to those representations. The new material is contradictory and needs careful analysis. We have only been able to carry out a limited exercise, which is set out here. The other numerous interested parties, such as the City of Winchester Trust, Winchester College and local residents, will have had no such opportunity." The solicitor's letter continued, "In the circumstances, it is not possible to deal with the Council's late material fairly or in a manner in which the committee will be able to reach informed and lawful conclusions this afternoon. The first application has been approved and building work has started, prompting opponents living mainly on Domham Road to seek a judicial review due to be heard at the High Court in London on November the 25th. The committee had been due to hear from objectors Richard Harwood QC and former city councillors Patrick Davis and Fiona Mather. Also due to speak was Ward Councillor Charles Radcliffe and Cabinet Member Councillor Martin Todd. Councillor Todd told the Chronicle, "Public consultation on the Voltex car park plans closed on August the 18th. However, when the City Council, in its role as the local planning authority, received a late representation on the Voltex application on September the 8th, it decided, in the interest of openness and transparency, to accept and publish it, even though it was after the deadline." In response to the points raised, the Council recapped previously provided responses, providing supporting information, and made its answer publicly available on the Friday before the meeting. On the morning of the Planning Committee, the Council received a further letter from the objectors' lawyers. "Since the Council is concerned to ensure this is a fair process for all parties, the Council is, as planning authority, decided to defer consideration of the application."
Opposition grows to MOD plans for base. A campaign to save threatened countryside at a military base is gaining support. Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council is seeking to protect open space at Sir John Moore Barracks, which local politicians fear is earmarked for housing. The Ministry of Defence is due to vacate the barracks in 2024, the home of the Army Training Regiment. It is drawing up plans with ideas including housing, a business park, community facilities and park and ride. The parish council wants to save 25 hectares as a nature reserve that has never been intensively farmed, although used for training recruits. In a letter to the Chronicle, Conservative councillors Pat Cunningham, Caroline Horrell and Stephen Godfrey said, "Not content with developing the inner 40 hectares of brownfield land, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, intends to build up to 1,200 dwellings across the entire estate on the false grounds that the ancient and untouched biodiverse rich spaces are technically previously developed brownfield land as well. This is the 25 hectares of open, unspoilt and untouched biodiverse rich land outside the boundary security fence in the northern part of the barracks. Sparsholt College is backing the nature reserve. Judy Milburn, principal, told the council, "At Sparsholt College, we have a number of FE and HE courses concerned with management of ecology and the environment. Having access to sites of scientific and ecological interest is important to the curriculum. If we were able to access a nature reserve locally, this would be of direct use to our staff and students for practical wildlife surveying and monitoring work and research studies for our degree course students." An MOD spokesperson said, "The MOD is committed to supporting biodiversity at all our sites and is working with Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and Natural England to ensure the proposals for Sir John Moore Barracks deliver enhancements to biodiversity and ecology. It has been consulting with local people, including the Parish Council, and are reviewing the alternative proposals being put forward for the northern part of the site that to date have been extensively cultivated for military training purposes." It's accompanied by a nice photograph of that biodiverse open area.
Public against Park Tower. The public was asked for its views on changes at Winchester's biggest park. The City Council says the people who responded mostly like the ideas for North Wall's recreation ground, except for two, the tower and painting the banana bridge yellow. Susan Croker, City Council Head of Landscape and Open Spaces, told the Town Forum there have been 580 responses to the public consultation in the early summer. The three most popular ideas were a new plaza, a multifunctional space with toilets, benches and a coffee van, a quieter area with wildlife planting and a new perimeter track. Ms Croker said painting the bridge was not popular, even though historically it was yellow. The perimeter track was popular with runners who take part in the weekly park runs. The consultation was for the future of the non-built parts of the track, so did not include the future use of the River Park Leisure Centre, Bowls Club or AstroTurf pitches and courts. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, told the forum that there would be an announcement in the autumn on the future of the Leisure Centre, now redundant with the opening of the £40 million centre on Garrison Ground at Bar End. Ideas have included a new concert hall and an outdoor lido on the site. Excuse me. Legal covenants restrict the uses that can be made, such as housing. The final proposals will be published in November. The piece is accompanied by a drawing of the proposed tower, which is a higgledy-piggledy sort of thing with what looks like a giant slide snaking round the outside.
And that concludes the headlines. So now we continue with death notices. The following deaths have been announced. Davenhill, Eleanor Davenhill, at Sunrise Care Home, aged 91. Eaton, David Eaton, after a long illness. Gray, Jennifer Gray, also after a long illness. Harrison, Marion Harrison, aged 82. And that concludes the deaths. We'll go over to Nick, please, for the Christian comment.
Closer to God through poetry. I expect most people are familiar with the saying, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. While the phrase was first coined in its present form in 1913, it was based on a Pembrokeshire rhyming proverb that originated in 1866. Although research shows that eating more apples may not actually be associated with fewer visits to the doctor, adding apples to your diet can help improve several aspects of both your physical and mental health. They apparently are especially good for the heart and in fighting some cancers. Eating them in excess, though, is not really a good thing. In these difficult times of lockdowns and restrictions to our daily life, it has been found that structure and routine are very important in maintaining our mental health, both calming anxiety and helping us plan for the day and then the days ahead. My mother was very fond of poetry and encouraged us as children both to listen and then to read it. We later discovered my father had learnt to appreciate it, as we found books he had bought for her and written verses on the fly sheets. When tasked with writing a poem for homework, they were both eager to help. Many years later, my father took to writing his own verse on the birth of his first grandchild, helped by a little homebrew. When our health was failing, we found that my mother really enjoyed reading the daily poem, which appeared in some newspapers. Then we were able to buy her books with daily poems, as well as various collections. Nowadays, one can obtain an app on your phone or iPad that makes these available. Poetry as an art form predates written text. The earliest poetry is believed to have been recited or sung, employed as a way of remembering oral history, family trees, and even laws. Poetry is often closely related to musical traditions, and the earliest poetry exists in the form of hymns and other types of song, such as chants. Poetry is not just secular, though, as it also plays an important part in religious and spiritual life. Much of the Old Testament is recognised as poetry, and perhaps the best known of all is the Book of Psalms. Many of these are linked to King David, and he may indeed have written some of them. They are as a dialogue with God. They express various moods and emotions, elations and joy, sadness and even anger. During lockdown, my own minister circulated a weekly sheet called Words of Encouragement. These were a reflection on some of the Psalms. Many appreciated them, as by reading them, we were connected both to her and to each other, and this was very sustaining in difficult times. Reading poetry daily may be something else we can introduce to give us another prop or give more meaning to our lives. And that piece is from Rosemary A. Baker.
And now we move to letters, and we'll go over to Barbara, please, for the first letter.
Well, we'll start with the letter that was quoted in the headline piece about the MOD reserve. Sir, we write to express our support for the Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council's campaign to establish a new nature reserve in the northern parklands of the Sir John Moore Barracks, Flowerdown, to the north of Winchester, Chronicle September the 16th. Not content with developing the inner 40 hectares of brownfield land, the Defence Infrastructure Organisation, DIO, of the MOD intends to build up to 1,200 dwellings across the entire estate, on the false grounds that the ancient and untouched biodiverse rich spaces are technically previously developed brownfield land as well. This is the 25 hectares of open, unspoilt and untouched biodiverse rich land outside the boundary security fence in the northern part of the barracks. Taking that ludicrous claim to its logical conclusion, because there are military huts on Salisbury Plain, does that give the DIO the green light to cement over the whole plain curtilage? We understand that the parish council is not opposed, in principle, to the development of the barracks within the security fence, provided the Littleton settlement gap is protected and maintains the individuality and character of the village separate from the expanding cityscape. We ask the DIO to reconsider their proposal. In addition to the existing residents of Winchester, the new homes in King's Barton, 2,000, and Flowerdown, 1,200, developments will add another approximately 10,000 plus residents into this immediate area. In the interests of their health and well-being, there has never been a stronger case for a new nature reserve accessible to local people. And that is signed by Councillor Patrick Cunningham, Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Councillor Caroline Horrell, Wanston and Mitchell Dever Ward Councillors, Winchester City Council.
And another letter is on the same subject. This one comes from Simon Lever, who says, "The new nature reserve initiative is to be applauded. With pure greenfield land under continuous risk from developers and associated building contractors, preserving Winchester and surrounds natural environment is an admirable mission. Thousands of new houses require infrastructure, drainage, and more cars will damage the air quality. Let's hope this nature reserve proposal will receive the go-ahead and is desperately needed now and for future generations." From Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Judith Martin writes on planning reform. "Sir, Mrs. Sims of Bishop's Waltham, in Chronicle Letters page of September 16th, is absolutely right about the need for a better system for planning meetings. I sympathise with her. She is just the latest in a long line of residents, council taxpayers and voters who are exasperated with the apparent inability of Winchester City Council to rein in rogue developers. I applaud the Chronicle's freedom of information request about the number of retrospective plans that slip through, though not the Council's lacklustre response. Nick Butler in Soberton is just the most extreme example of developers taking not the slightest notice of any legal requirements. But then there's also Winchester City Council taking not the slightest notice of the legal requirements around the imminent judicial review on the multi-storey car park at Bar End. As Mrs. Sims says, it really is time to have a better system. One improvement that could be made is to rethink the public consultation at the start of council meetings. A member of the public has to say beforehand if they want 3 minutes to put their case before the meeting. If the matter is contentious, it's likely several people want to make the same point, which is simply a waste of time. Mind you, councillors also come to meetings with speeches they are determined to read out, even if the point has been made before. Almost certainly, councillors will already have had letters or emails expressing public dismay, so they know what to expect. They are unlikely to react in the meeting to something said immediately before. So it means there's no opportunity for a member of the public to react or even to correct what is said by the committee. What members of the public would prefer, I suspect, is to respond to what councillors have said in regard to any particular item. Long and tiresome as meetings very often are, it would be better to have the public involvement at the end of each item rather than the beginning. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
Rising energy bills. Sir, how costly might the government's energy policy be? In our house, we use 3.5 kilowatts of electricity currently. To that will be added the 9,000 miles a year in our electric car that will need 4,000 kilowatt hours from the grid. Our use of domestic gas splits almost in half, 5,000 kilowatt hours for space heating and 5,000 kilowatt hours for hot tap water. For our space heating, a best case might be a heat pump using 2,000 kilowatt hours. For hot tap water, a heat pump shows little advantage and that 5,000 kilowatt hours will come from an immersion heater. Do the maths, and our new electric future requires a fourfold increase in supply. How is that to happen? Is hydrogen an alternative? Every 3 kilowatt hours of low pressure hydrogen needs 4 kilowatt hours of electricity to produce it, so no relief there. When compressed for use in vehicles, it will be 4 times the cost of diesel per mile before taxes. Will renewable energy fall in price as eco-extremists claim? Wind, solar and heat pump technologies are all far down their respective learning curves, so not much more to come. Nuclear power has gone up and not down as predicted. To drive home the point, my 100% wind power supplier has just increased prices by a whopping 30%. Claims for off-peak smart charging are similarly misplaced. Solar power is zero in off-peak, middle of the night periods, leaving a much reduced or nil off-peak surplus. The bottom line is that my bill for energy will at least double before taxes. Most other goods and services will also go up in price because of their energy content. I will lose about 9% of my net income. It looks set to be an expensive and perhaps ruinous policy that makes a Tory tax increase look like pocket money. Are we sure about this? And that's from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston, Winchester.
This one is headed Where to Walk, and it comes from Sue Bell. I was heartened to read Tom Bromley's article in the Chronicle, August the 5th, in which he draws attention to the imminent revision of the Highway Code to include a new road user hierarchy, giving pedestrians and cyclists priority. This spring, the Hampshire County Council cut back the tree branches and scrub alongside the A33 north of Winchester. The neglected pavement lying beneath the vegetation was revealed. In sections, the condition of the tarmac of this previously obscured pavement is in remarkably good condition. Removal of the lower lateral branches from the roadside and hedgerow trees will allow wild flowers to return at ground level, thereby re-establishing a varied natural habitat between the road and the arable landscape. The A33 has the potential to be a thoroughfare for everybody in the local community. Heavy traffic and through traffic should be using the M3, running parallel to this ancient route. Local traffic, cyclists and pedestrians, wish to use this route in safety. And whilst Hampshire County Council has improved pedestrian access, there remains one major snag, the speed of the traffic. Is there a speed limit on an A road? You would never believe it if you tried to walk beside the A33. In the early days of lockdown, when vehicle movements were reduced and people valued the opportunity to leave their homes and to exercise locally, it was possible to include stretches of the A33, thereby giving options for circular walking routes. Unfortunately, now the volume and speed of traffic excludes these options. Rights of way through the countryside are cherished by ramblers. They are increasingly used for recreation, family walks, and short local journeys. I suggest we should be mindful of those roadside pavements that were intended for pedestrian use but have become disused as a result of our over-reliance upon motor vehicles. One hugely positive result of COVID is our recognition of the values both of physical exercise and the natural environment with their role in keeping us all sane. Can we reclaim pavements for pedestrians? If you make it easier to and safer to walk and cycle, more people choose to walk and cycle instead of driving. And that comes from Sue Bell of Mitchell Dever Station.
And more on the eco theme, Hazel Agombar writes on log burners. Sir, with summer behind us and the evenings drawing in, some folk may be anticipating cosy nights at home by the log burner. This fashion for domestic wood burning, however, has turned some Winchester neighbourhoods into air pollution hotspots. Wood smoke is toxic, carcinogenic, and contains high levels of particulate matter, the tiny particles so harmful to human health, PM2.5. When inhaled, these particles cross into the bloodstream and can affect all parts of the body. It's why wood smoke is linked to an increased risk of major diseases such as cancer, heart disease, and dementia. You can detect if you are living in a hotspot. You will smell wood smoke in your street. Your clothes will smell of wood smoke after a short walk around the block. Your pet's fur will smell of wood smoke. Those with a keen sense of smell will detect wood smoke from neighbours' log burners around window and door frames, as well as other natural leakage points in the home, such as vents and letterboxes. The majority of the smoke is not blown away immediately, but lingers around homes, affecting indoor air quality too. There are many myths surrounding log burners. It is the fact that they all pollute, no matter how modern and eco-designed they are. None are carbon neutral, certainly not in the time frame that we have to dramatically reduce carbon emissions if we're to meet the climate crisis challenge. It takes years for a tree to grow and minutes for it to burn. The reality is that log burners in residential settings are mini incinerators, forcing an entire neighbourhood to passively smoke the products of combustion. It's likely their days are numbered. In its 2020 coronavirus report, the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Air Quality called on the government to phase out the use of wood-burning stoves in homes. I welcome the City Council's campaign to raise awareness of the long-term health impact on families and their neighbours, encouraging owners to reduce and ideally avoid burning. With a respiratory pandemic still in our midst and a climate crisis, there has never been a better time to protect the quality of the air that we share. And that's from Hazel Agombar, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
baby responses. Excuse me. Sir, the views expressed by John Airy in last week's edition, Letters, September the 16th, requires some comment regarding his suggestion that in order to solve the social care budget problem, we should remove maternity as an NHS-funded benefit and privatise it. His premise seems to be that pregnancy is a choice and not an illness. Therefore, why should the NHS pick up the bill? The billions of pounds saved to be diverted to the social care budget. His hope is that people would think twice before having too many children. I read Mr. Airy's letter aloud to my daughter. Her reaction was to say, "Don't tell me, Dad, but did a man write that letter?" We went on to wonder why Mr. Airy stopped at maternity costs and failed to mention smoking, drinking, obesity, even getting into your car that might result in an accident. These are all choices and not illnesses, where the NHS currently bears the cost of the unintended consequences of our choices. Perhaps a more equitable solution for the maternity issue would be to limit child benefit allowance and have it paid to the first child only, thereby giving pause for thought before embarking on enlarging the family and also releasing funding for other purposes. But apart from these comments, I hate to think what might happen to the national abortion figures should Mr. Airy's solution ever get adopted. And that's from A5 Hairstock Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
Now, this one has a rather odd heading. Gen Z on B2177. It's from Margot Walker. And she comes, she's in Bishop's Waltham, which I think will become obvious. I am writing to protest the HGVs barrelling down quiet country lanes in Upham, as reported here recently. I find it unconscionable that in 2021 we have to write to protest these enormous polluting vehicles, not to mention the noise and vibrations that have been allowed to be anywhere near the national park, let alone cause such upset inside it. How is it possible that Winchester County Council has allowed this to happen? Every day, it seems, we have people occupying London streets and blocking the M25 to draw attention to the government, to change policies, to stop attacking our fragile green spaces, which are scarcer and scarcer in the south of England. Surely this is why the South Downs National Park was created in the first place, and not even that long ago. Indeed, if this was sanctioned in error, it must be recognised as a miscalculation, and so there are ways to stop the madness, but only if there is a will within local government. The loser in this scenario is the environment, and as always, it is the future generations who will suffer. The so-called tragedy of the commons. I recommend that the council review this contravention as a matter of urgency before Generation Z stages a sit-in on the B2177. And that's Margot Walker, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
Yes, and more on the use of our roads and byways. Paul Hickey writes about the need for more cycle lanes. Sir, a letter addressed to all those car fanatics who constantly moan about car parking facilities in Winchester High Street. Get out of your flipping cars and walk there. Residents in most parts of Winchester can easily walk to Winchester High Street within half an hour. If you're elderly or infirm or live right on the outskirts of Winchester or outside Winchester, you can easily get a bus. We need fewer cars in Winchester High Street with all the pollution that that brings. Get out of your flipping cars, all you moaners. There is one regular and anonymous commentator to the Hampshire Chronicle website with the name Whiteshoot who is constantly urging free-flowing traffic in the city centre and more car parks. I don't know if anyone has heard of this term, but it's called climate change. Has anyone heard of this term? Cars are one of the biggest causes. I used to live in Harlow in Essex, which has a wonderful network of cycle lanes. You can travel from one end of the town to the other end, purely using those cycle lanes. This is what is needed in Winchester, a comprehensive network of safe cycle lanes. It is far too dangerous to cycle on the roads, and you are putting your life in your hands when you do. When I see those bicycles which have a baby or toddler trolley attached to them, I really wince. It is so irresponsible and dangerous for a parent to do this to their baby or toddler. And that is from Paul Hickey in Parchment Street in Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we come to Hampshire Chronicle comment, please, Barbara.
Editorial comment: the definition of brownfield land. The Ministry of Defence is seeking to maximise the windfall it can generate by selling off its Sir John Moore Barracks site to a developer. We revealed last week that Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council has launched a campaign to have 25 hectares of the base converted into a nature reserve. On a letter to the Chronicle published on this page, three local councillors say the MOD is pushing for more than 1,000 new homes on this land on the grounds that it is brownfield. This is pushing the definition of the word to breaking point. The land has never been brownfield. It has never been anything other than undeveloped open space. The MOD has effectively run the area as a nature reserve, and in the 80s and 90s used to promote its green credentials in its care of the land. Claiming it as brownfield because recruits have used a bit for cross-country runs or held training exercises will not wash. The MOD, through its Defence Infrastructure Organisation, needs to recalibrate its ambitions for this area. These 25 hectares should not be developed in any way.
And now we come to First Person, written by George Hayter. He says, at school in Hampshire, I was only about 10 when I was made to do boxing. At first, I enjoyed the fights. To win, all I had to do was to hit the other boy's face as hard as I could over and over again. Opening with a storm of aggression like that always seemed to make opponents too scared to try hitting me back. But then I was pitted against Sam Organ. I remember his name because he ended my brief boxing career. Sam Organ's boxing tactic was the same as mine. However, his opening rain of punches was harder and went on forever. No pause for me to hit back. All I could do was put my boxing gloves in front of my face and hide. I knew the saying, attack is the best form of defence. But that maxim seemed unworkable when it was Sam Organ's machine gun fists pummeling me. Keeping my face hidden behind both gloves seemed the only sensible option. Is there a lesson there for US and UK foreign policy? After terrorists murdered 3,000 innocent, mainly American people on 9/11/2001, President G.W. Bush straight away planned to hit back. His policy announcement of a war on terror immediately struck me as impossible. The aviation atrocities at the 2001 day were more the work of individuals than nations. How can a war be waged against unconnected individuals and groups all secretly plotting at home? The war on terror led to the invasion of Afghanistan and its military occupation for 20 years, on the grounds that Afghanistan's Taliban rulers had failed to hand over 9/11 mastermind Osama bin Laden. Today, Bush says he is satisfied with the action he took, and it is true that the Taliban were removed from power and bin Laden was eventually killed in Pakistan. Also, Bush supporters can point out that there's been no terrorism on the scale of 9/11 in America since the Afghanistan invasion. However, the Taliban were driven into hiding rather than being destroyed, and for two decades they fought a guerrilla war that imposed fear and poverty on the country. Involvement in Afghanistan cost America thousands of deaths and trillions of dollars. Yet, along with the later invasion of Iraq, it may actually have recruited terrorists. Young Muslim men, humiliated by what they consider aggression by the US and its British allies, see their country defiled and want to hit back. Al-Qaeda, the group associated with bin Laden, were undefeated. 5 years after 9/11, they got close to blowing up seven airliners flying from Britain to North America. I reckon it would have been better if, instead of declaring a war on terror after a 9/11, Bush had instead ushered in a protect and punish policy. Money wasted on the Afghan war would have been better spent on anti-terrorism protection in the US and on its borders, and on diplomacy to bring terrorists to international justice. The $3 trillion invasion bill could have paid for an awful lot of air marshals and intelligence officers back home in the States. Few lives would have been lost, and in Muslim countries, the UK and US would not be seen as hated invaders. After 9/11, America had the sympathy of the world. After the war on terror, it had less sympathy and less respect. One of Britain's security chiefs agrees that war on terror was a poor choice of words. MI5 Director General Ken McCallum said, "I think it tends to pay the terrorists a compliment by sort of treating them as soldiers, when in fact I think they're better treated as criminals." Despite the war on terror, terrorist threats to the UK are continuing. Mr. McCallum told Radio 4, "In the last 4 years, for example, working with the police, my organisation has disrupted 31 late-stage attack plots in Great Britain." The MI5 boss said most of the plots involved Islamic extremists. And that was written by George Hayter. And now we come to what's supposed to be an alternative look at the news with Belgarum, though I'm not quite sure what's so alternative about these two items. So we'll go over to Nick.
Yes, the first piece is entitled Silver Gilt Medal for College at Show. During a year like no other, Sparsholt College have continued their RHS Chelsea Flower Show medal-winning run with the news of a silver gilt medal awarded to the team. The news comes after an action-packed press day where celebrities got an exclusive view of the gardens. Famous faces visiting the Sparsholt stand included BBC radio presenters Nick Grimshaw and Joe Wiley, and comedians Lee Mack and Bill Bailey. Sparsholt College's 2020-2021 garden, the Natural Calendar, celebrates a true hero of Hampshire and the natural world for the tercentenary, plus one of Gilbert White's birth. Created in collaboration with Gilbert White and the Oates Collections, the garden is sponsored by seed and plant specialist Thompson and Morgan. The garden takes as its theme climate change, showing how observations by White, 1720 to 1793, the father of ecology, enlightened people to the changing seasons and species activity. The Natural Calendar brings to life phenology, the study of nature's life cycles and seasonal variations in climate from 300 years in the past through to the present day, looking into the potential impact on future plant species survival. The students were supported on their stand by Countryfile and Radio 4 presenter Tom Heap, who spoke to the team and visitors on the impact of climate change on the world of horticulture. The garden is the first in college history to have two cohorts of students work on the design and build, as COVID disruption saw the rescheduling of the 2020 May show to the autumn. Undeterred, the team have adapted the garden for the different season and have enjoyed rolling over the celebrations for the 301st anniversary of White's birth. And there are three photographs accompanying this piece. One taken a picture of Nick Grimshaw standing in front of a sort of thatched little hut. And then there's one showing Tom Heap and Joe Wiley with a couple of students, and another one with Tom Heap and some more students, all smiling well, and visitors from the Chelsea show.
And the second piece is almost a what's on. Wainfleet Singers back in concert. A Winchester choir are preparing to perform their first concert in 18 months. The Wainfleet Singers, with the ECO in concert, an autumn Thanksgiving, takes place on October the 16th at Winchester Cathedral. The choir will be joined by the English Chamber Orchestra, who are the most recorded chamber orchestra in the world. The concert includes the premiere of the choir's 50th anniversary commission. Excuse me. Now, this piece is almost a what's on item. A Winchester choir are preparing to perform their first concert in 18 months. The Wainfleet Singers with the ECO in concert, an autumn Thanksgiving, takes place on October the 16th at Winchester Cathedral. The choir will be joined by the English Chamber Orchestra, who are the most recorded chamber orchestra in the world. The concert includes the premiere of the choir's 50th anniversary commission from Roderick Williams, based on John Keats's Ode to Autumn. The poem was written over 200 years ago, after a walk by the poet along the River Itchen in Winchester. The new work included an additional stanza by contemporary poet John Greening. Internationally renowned cellist Natalie Klein will perform Haydn's Cello Concerto No. 1 in C, with the ECO in accompaniment. The major choral piece in this concert is Bruckner's Mass in F minor, a work composed in 1867 as a thanksgiving for his return to health after a long-term illness. The lineup of soloists includes mezzo-soprano Claire Barnett-Jones, who was a finalist and winner of the Dame Joan Sutherland Audience Prize at the BBC Cardiff Singer of the World 2021. Alongside her are two further prize winners from the 2019 Grange Festival International Singing Competition, tenor Jael Kim and bass baritone Jerome Knox, both awarded the Wainfleet Prize.
Now this week's announcements. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 24th of September 2021, today, at 6:54 a.m. and begins at 7 p.m. On Wednesday the 29th of September, it ends at 7:02 a.m. and begins again at 6:49 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news, and we'll go over to Nick, please, for the first one.
Night shelter. Winchester Church's night shelter is inviting people to come along in person to their annual supporters' evening and AGM. The event will be held at United Church Winchester on Wednesday, September the 29th at 6:45 p.m. There's also the option to attend online. The event is an opportunity to discover more about the invaluable support being given to people experiencing homelessness in the city. Chief Executive Michelle Price said, "We are really missed seeing our supporters over the last 18 months. We are so looking forward to getting together and sharing our news and plans for the future. Please come along whether you are a current supporter or just curious to know more about how we support people in the city. The evening will be a chance to learn how the charity has adapted and coped during the pandemic with a focus on the well-being of residents. Residents will share their experiences and talk about the ways in which the night shelter has helped them to escape homelessness. The charity is now open 24 hours a day, every day of the year, and has therefore outgrown the name night shelter. Supporters attending the event will be the first to discover the new name." And just reminding you, that evening is going to be at the United Church Winchester, Wednesday, September 29th at 6:45 p.m.
Amazon slogan, "Work hard, have fun, dump trash." A company worth more than $1 trillion has launched an investigation after its products were found dumped on the edge of Winchester. Around half a dozen Amazon delivery bags were found fly-tipped by Claire Rayner earlier this month. She said that a number of Amazon bags and contents were discarded at a gate to a field along Sarum Road on the western edge of the city. When questioned by the Chronicle, a spokesperson for the company said, "Amazon strives to be a great neighbour. We are actively investigating this matter." The location is known, the rough date of the dumping is known, and presumably Amazon will have details of each delivery, which may throw light on who is responsible. But the reason why the bags which belong to Amazon were dumped is a mystery. Fly tipping is becoming an increasing problem, usually on quieter rural roads, where tippers stand less chance of being seen and their number plates noted. This is the first time that Amazon delivery bags have been dumped. The usual litter is unwanted household items. Local authorities are increasingly taking action against fly tippers, with offenders being prosecuted in the magistrates' courts. The problem appears to have worsened post-lockdown, since restrictions were placed on public using county council recycling centres. And there's a picture of a pile of blue padded bags, messenger bags sort of thing, just lying in a hedgerow. What a mystery.
Residents are invited for booster. Hampshire residents are being urged to get their COVID booster jab as bookings open. The COVID vaccination programme has started taking online and phone bookings for the booster jab. Vulnerable people across the county are being invited to top up their protection ahead of winter, 6 months or more after receiving their second jab. They do not need to contact the NHS, but will be invited when it's their turn. Texts and letters are going out to around 1.5 million people this week. Those in line for a booster jab include everyone aged 50 and over, frontline health and social care workers, and those aged between 16 and 49 with an underlying health condition, putting them at greater risk from the virus. People can either book online via the NHS website or by phoning 119. Dr. Nikki Kanani, Deputy Vaccine Leader for the vaccine programme, has called on people to book their top-up vaccine as soon as they are invited to ensure they get extra protection ahead of Winchester. Dr. Nikki Kadani, JP and Deputy Lead for the COVID Vaccination Programme, said an incredible 77 million vaccinations have taken place since the largest vaccination programme in NH history launched, and thanks to hard-working NHS staff, within 48 hours of receiving the advice, the NHS has put booster vaccines in people's arms, along with starting the school vaccination programme. Now that the National Booking Service has opened to people eligible for a booster, it's time to book yourself in. The vaccines are the best way to protect yourself, your family and friends.
And more on the NHS. NHS Trust Members Meeting. The NHS Trust behind mental health and learning disability services in Hampshire will speak with the public. Sutton Health is inviting people to join its annual members meeting on Thursday, September the 30th, between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. The event will highlight how the Trust continues to respond to the ongoing challenges of COVID-19, as well as showcase some of the new ways it is supporting patients, carers and staff. Lynn Hunt, Chairman of Sutton Health, said, "I'm looking forward to welcoming everyone to this year's event. It is a great opportunity to talk about the work we are doing, particularly our new initiative to employ people who are carers to their loved ones so we can learn from them. It's been such a challenging year for so many people, and it's crucial to pause and reflect on what we have experienced, what we have achieved, and how we move forwards." Attendees will hear about the multi-million pound investment into major refurbishments at mental health facilities, including the Poppy Ward at Gosport War Memorial Hospital. During the evening, Jonathan Pritchard, Associate Director of Housing, will talk about his new role in supporting patients to find suitable accommodation. Chief Executive Ron Shields will also provide a review of the year. He said, "This will be my second annual members' meeting as Chief Executive, and it's a great time to reflect on the last year of incredible work of our staff, particularly during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Book a place online at shftawm2021.eventbrite.co.uk. That one again, shftawm2021.eventbrite.co.uk. A full programme is at www.southern.nhs.uk/AWM. Sorry, a bit of a mouthful there. And just a reminder, that annual members meeting is on Thursday, September the 30th, between 6 and 8 p.m.
Hampshire Pier works to protect chalk streams. Stronger protection of Hampshire chalk streams has been secured in the House of Lords. A Hampshire member helped to beef up the Environment Bill. Lord Chidgey, former MP for Eastleigh, who lives in Alsford, said, "The final version of the Environment Bill has eventually ground its way through the House of Lords over the past 2 weeks. The parliamentary bill is some 260 pages long. It covers every aspect of the environment and was subject to 300 amendments, all of which were debated in the House of Lords." Lord Chidgey confirmed he tabled an amendment calling for government to have a statutory duty to protect and restore chalk streams, with the drive, commitment and funding needed to reverse damage caused over decades. He stressed a major cause has been domestic sewage pollution, but a prime culprit is still phosphorus runoff from agriculture into our streams and rivers. Only 14% of our rivers in England meet the standards of good ecological status, said Lord Chidgey. International standards have been set out and agreed, but interventions have failed to drive the changes needed to save many of our freshwater species from the risk of extinction. Lord Chidgey called on the government to adopt the recommendations in the multi-agency Chalk Stream Restoration Group's report, supported by the Angling Trust, calling for clear, unambiguous protected status. In his response, Lord Goldsmith, Minister for the Environment, assured Lord Chidgey that he shared his concerns and that the government will take the recommendations extremely seriously and are committed to the overall direction and ambition of the group's report.
Celebration of life for well-known Winchester man. A celebration of life will be held later this month to pay tribute to the life of a well-known Winchester man. Pete Spelman will be remembered in a service at the Theatre Royal, Winchester, on September the 27th from 10:50 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pete, who lived in Winchester since 1985, died aged 57 on May the 4th this year after being diagnosed with motor neurone disease in September 2018. The service will feature music chosen by Pete, photos, and 10 speakers will share their memories of him. During his life, he was a great runner, running for Fleet and Crookham running clubs, as well as Winchester and District Athletics Club. He volunteered as member of the board and later chairman of the Theatre Royal, and a coach and then chairman of the Winchester and District Athletics Club. He taught himself the bass guitar and started a band called Five Shades of Grey, playing over 70 gigs with them in the Winchester area. Michelle Spelman, Pete's wife for over 30 years, and their two daughters completed the 55 miles London to Brighton cycle ride on September the 19th to raise money for the Motor Neurone Disease Association. As well as this, Pete's daughters completed their own fundraising challenge earlier this year. Michelle said his daughters, Harriet, 23, and Gabrielle, 20, completed the National Three Peaks Challenge in June this year, climbing Ben Nevis, Scafell Pike, and Snowdon in 22 hours. And there's a lovely picture of Pete and his family on a boat on, I should imagine, Southampton Water in the sunshine. And it's a nice way to remember him.
Garden Party for Veterans. A garden party for Armed Forces veterans was enjoyed by over 200 people. The event was part of the British Armed Forces charity The Not Forgotten nationwide live drive-in concert tour to support veterans. The tour features 11 complimentary Forgot You Not Rock summer garden party drive-in concerts, with two hosted at the Grange near Alsford on September the 8th. The drive-in concerts featured live music, dancing, interactive games and raffle, a barbecue and refreshments. Lord and Lady Ashburton attended and presented a prize of a bottle of champagne to residents of Moorlands Lodge Care Home in Hindhead, who won the Best Dressed competition. Brigadier James Stopford, CEO of the Not Forgotten, said, "Despite the easing of restrictions, it has been an incredibly challenging time for so many who have suffered with loneliness and mental health issues. We are bringing some much-needed cheer, fun and entertainment to veterans across the country." And there's three lovely summer afternoon pictures here taken at the Grange, with the Grange in the background, and pictures of Lord and Lady Ashburton presenting that bottle of champagne to the group from Moorlands Lodge for the best dress competition winner. Two of the ladies there with pink neckerchiefs and matching wigs and Dame Edna-style sunglasses on, by the looks of it. All looks a lot of fun there.
Disused railway bridge looks set to be infilled. A bridge over a disused railway line in a Hampshire village looks set to be infilled. The Stoke Road Bridge, which spans the disused Midhants Railway and the Watercress Way walking route, is part of a Highways England proposal to fill concrete underneath bridges they deem to be unsafe. This has drawn criticism because the roads body decided that it would carry out the infilling under permitted development rights. This allows temporary works to be carried out without planning permission in emergency situations presenting a serious threat of death or injury. The government announced earlier this year that the works programme was being paused until the autumn so they could consult with local communities. Highways England Historical Railways Estate Director Richard Marshall said, "The Historical Railways Estate, HRE, is an important part of our industrial heritage. We continue to work closely with stakeholders to keep the estate and public safe, safeguard its future, ensure value for money for the taxpayer, and reuse the assets wherever possible. This is why, where it is safe to, we have paused all infilling and demolition work to give further time for local authorities and interest groups to fully consider HRE structures as part of their local plans to benefit walking, cycling and heritage railways. The bridge, which is 156 years old, is Bridge 78 on the Watercress Way's 27-mile waymarked circular route, which uses sections of two old railways and existing rights of way between Alsford, Kingsworthy and Sutton Scotney near Winchester. Highways England proposal would see 115 infilled bridges planned and 15 to be destroyed nationwide if all the planned work resumes. A representative from the Watercress Way has been asked for a comment, but it did not respond before the Chronicle went to print. And there's a picture of a rather rural scene of a railway bridge, and you're sort of standing at one end of the bridge, looking across and off into the countryside in the distance. It does look very nice for a walk or a bike ride.
Pylons to be upgraded by £470,000 investment. Power supplies to Hampshire villages are being upgraded by Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks. The upgrade centres around Barton Stacey and includes Bullington, Wadston, Drayton and Sutton Scotney and will benefit nearly 1,000 households. Running until the end of the year, the works will involve a significant upgrade to overhead infrastructure. The project will focus on upgrading overhead conductors and the replacement of old wood poles and transformers. This will build greater resilience in the face of adverse weather, reduce unplanned interruptions, and will meet the electricity needs of local homes and businesses as they move to meet their net zero goals. Project planner John O'Reilly said, SSEN, that's the Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks, is delighted to carry out these improvement works across Barton Stacey, building a resilient power supply that will stand up to inclement weather and suit their needs for many years. SSEN is carrying out this project under careful planning, which will have the least impact on our customers and the environment in the vicinity of the works. I'd like to reassure our customers that we will complete this upgrade with minimal planned power supply interruptions. Any customers who may be affected by this will be notified well in advance of any potential interruptions, which will be as short as possible in duration while we carry out these improvement works. SSEN would like to take this opportunity to remind residents of its Priority Services Register and encourage them to sign up for extra assistance through the free additional service which helps those who may be vulnerable in the event of a power cut. Customers can qualify if they are deaf or hard of hearing, have a disability, live with children under five, are blind or partially sighted, have a chronic illness, use medical equipment, aids reliant on electricity, are over 60, are categorised at high risk and extremely high risk of severe illness from coronavirus. And if you want to find out more about the Priority Services Register, you can telephone 0800 294 3259. That's 0800 294 3259.
Rubbish bins blighting city centre streets. Winchester civic chiefs say they are taking action over the worsening state of bins and rubbish sacks in the city centre. The issue was raised by former City Councillor Ian Tait at the Winchester Town Forum last Thursday. Mr. Tait told the meeting, "As someone who spends quite a lot of time in central Winchester, I wanted to point out some issues which I feel deserve urgent attention. Some of you will be aware that after many years of campaigning, Fiona Mather and I were able to get the City Council to implement a commercial refuse policy, as previously many businesses simply left their large refuse bins out permanently on the pavement. The new regime forced them to either use the new compounds provided by the council or hold their rubbish inside the premises." Mr. Tait added, "Things have started to slip and Hammond's Passage is going back to its awful past. In the square, there are often bins left out pretty much permanently, and across the city centre, I regularly see refuse bags littering our pavements. In fact, I'm sad to report that the council's own building, Coitbury House, has a whole pile of rubbish bags stacked outside the front door. No one has obviously thought about where the new residents put their rubbish. Hopefully, this can be sorted out very quickly." Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for the Economic Recovery, said, "I share Mr. Tait's concerns about the bins and have been speaking to city and county officers and retired city officers who improved things in the first place." He said the system for storing bins and powers to tackle the problems of obstruction was still in place. "We will work with the Business Improvement District to reboot the regime." "Complaints should be made to the County Council," he said, "and they will write to the businesses not abiding by the rules." Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said the problem outside Coitbury House on Friarsgate had been a lack of drivers in the collection service. The sacks have now been cleared. Coitbury House was for many years an empty office block, but has recently been leased for accommodation for key workers. The problem has not got noticeably worse in recent months, with the hospitality sector getting back into full swing after the lockdown's disrupted business. And that piece is accompanied by a not terribly pleasant photograph of black rubbish bin bags piled up outside the front door of Coitbury House in Friarsgate.
City care home closure finalised. A Winchester charity has confirmed the closure of a specialist dementia care home. St John's Winchester has announced that all residents have moved to new homes and the home is being decommissioned, with its windows now boarded up. In a statement, the charity said, "We would like to thank first and foremost the next of kin with whom we have worked to facilitate the best transitions possible for our former residents. Our brilliant staff who have stayed with the home and prioritised the care of residents at this particularly difficult time, and our colleagues from Hampshire County Council who have done a great job in finding new accommodation and care. St John's Chairman of Trustees, Roger Bright, said, "It is a sad day, but we are so pleased that residents have been found alternative accommodation that suits their needs. Our staff have been incredibly supportive, and I would like to thank the nurses, carers and domestic staff for their dedication in this period, and that of our Moorside matron, Deborah McCarthy, working together with Sarah Weeks, our head of care, to ensure resident safety. The charity is now focused on ensuring that the legacy of Moorside is not lost, and we continue to care for older people in Winchester and the surrounding areas. Although at an early stage, it is moving ahead with plans to convert Moorside into up to 18 new almshouses, subject to planning permission." Clive Cook, Charity Chief Executive, added, "Our staff at Moorside are of high quality, and so it is not surprising that for the most part, those that wanted to continue in care have found suitable roles to build on their skills and dedication. Fortunately, we have been able to redeploy a small number of carers into our almshouse support team. We wish our former residents, families and staff members well for the future. St John's Winchester is one of the country's oldest charities, with over 9 centuries of history and years of experience supporting older people of limited means. Its almshouse community offers supported independent living in a friendly social setting, with plans to expand its accommodation provision to the local community. With a rich history but a thoroughly modern outlook, the charity provides care and support to 150 older people in Winchester who choose to make St John's their home. It also delivers wider community support to local older people through its wellbeing initiative, St John's Hand in Hand." And there's a photo of Moorside on the side of the road there. Rather a smart modern brick building, but as it said, with the bottom floor windows all boarded up.
Triumph as half marathon returns. Hundreds of runners pounded the pavement as Winchester's most popular sporting event returned. The streets were filled with half marathon participants on Sunday, September the 19th. Starting from the Broadway, runners made their way out to Hursley before heading back into the city from the west. The event is annually organised by Rhys Leisure. Crossing the finish line in first place was Winchester and District Athletics Club member Guy Brain in a time of 1 hour and 16 minutes, followed by James McKinnell at 1 hour and 17 minutes. The first woman to cross the line was Laura Butchart with a time of 1 hour and 33 minutes. According to the results, 736 finished the 13.1094 mile course. And there's a picture to go with this of a runner obviously going through Winchester, because we can see her, and then behind her are a whole lot of people sitting out at tables eating and drinking and taking absolutely no notice of her.
Incredible Heritage Festival, a success. The organisers of Winchester Heritage Open Days, HODS, have said that it has been another incredible year. Thousands of local residents and visitors came from far and wide and visited the city and surrounding villages and towns to discover and enjoy Hampshire's amazing local heritage, history and culture. There were 221 events taking place across the county, of which 115 were included in the Winchester Heritage Open Days programme. Highlights included the Baker's Dozen of events at Winchester College, Two-Time Theatre's production of Pies and Prejudice at Abbey House, Food Festival at Whitchurch Silk Mill, walking tours around Winchester and the Great Hall, Open Days on the Leckford Estate, the Hyde 900 display in the Inner Close, the cemetery tours at both Magdalen Hill and West Hill, heritage craft masterclasses, workshops and trails run by many of Winchester's local restaurants and shops. The opening weekend also saw the Friends of King Alfred buses display and running day. The team also put an online programme which drew people from as far afield as Stonehaven in Scotland and New Hampshire in the USA. Many of the online offerings are still available to watch or listen to via the Trust's website at WinchesterHeritageOpenDays.org. And that's all one word, WinchesterHeritageOpenDays.org. And films of live streamed events will be available from mid-October. Feedback from the festival goers and also event organisers has been extremely positive, with many commenting on the friendliness and knowledge of the guides and venues. One person shared, "I have also joined some events from other areas which I have enjoyed, but your," that's Winchester Odds, "site and offering far outweighs everyone else. Cannot wait for next year." The programme was again coordinated and promoted by Becky Brown and Nikki Gottlieb, trustees of Hampshire History Trust, with assistance from other part-time volunteers. Sponsors Winchester College, Winchester BID and Hampshire County Council have been incredibly supportive again this year. Going forward into 2022, Hampshire History Trust intends to employ part-time staff and will be launching a fundraising campaign within the next few weeks.
Tie future for closed city bar. A city centre bar looks set to be converted into a branch of a popular Thai restaurant chain. Chok D, the business name of the Giggling Squid brand, is seeking permission to sell takeaway food from Winchester's former Slug and Lettuce building on the square. The company, which has nearby branches in Chichester and Salisbury, has applied to alter the planning conditions of 12 to 13 the square. In its application, Chok D said, "The planning approval for restaurant use was awarded back in 1997. In this period, takeaway food was associated with eating in public spaces and the antisocial aspect of litter and food being dropped in those public spaces. This is no longer the case, and click and collect and delivery services are seen as an essential norm for a restaurant to offer, where restaurant quality food can be enjoyed at home. This is why Condition 7 of the 1997 planning approval is being sought to be removed. Winchester City Council is yet to decide on the application. As previously reported, Sunday, September the 12th, was Slug and Lettuce's last day, according to a sign in the window. Giggling Squid, which specialises in Thai dishes, is a southern chain with a number of restaurants in London."
Now, this article is about Hampshire cricket. Hampshire, the cricket club, are planning to utilise Winchester College, one of the most famous schools in the country, as an outground in preference to returning to venues such as Basingstoke, Portsmouth or Arundel in Sussex, where the club played last year. The college have provided hybrid pitches for the square on the main ground, and Hampshire have been impressed with the facilities in the pavilion and the amount of space for car parking and seating. An outground is needed, as the expectation is that international matches will continue to be staged at Aegeus Bowl, Hampshire's headquarters, which is also used as a venue for Southern Brave, Southern Vipers, and for pop concerts, in addition to the club's matches. It is hoped the club will play again at New Close on the Isle of Wight, where a championship match against Nottinghamshire was held in 2019, but any fixture there involves additional transportation and hotel costs. The pitches are a little slow and of low bounce, so we're looking to inject some pace in partnership with the college, Hampshire Director of Cricket Giles White said. Simon Lee, head groundsman at Aegeus Bowl, has inspected the square and the club has offered to second one of his staff to the college. Hampshire hope to play at Winchester again in 2 years' time, starting with a limited overs match and progressing to first-class level. Some of the club's junior age group and women's sides have already used the ground and the nets. The academy may use the college for some ECB Southern Premier Division matches in 2022. There's a view of the cathedral from the pavilion, and the River Itchen flows at the bottom of the ground, which is centrally located and within walking distance of the train station, shops, pubs, hotels and restaurants. Winchester has everything, David Mann, Hampshire's chief executive, said. We've not given up on Basingstoke, but the facilities and boundary lengths do not quite meet ECB standards, and they know that. If we use an outground next year, it will be New Close. That was Isle of Wight, I think. Matches at Winchester would be staged in the summer holidays, as is the case at Cheltenham College, a popular outground which has survived a general culling of festival cricket in recent years. It is believed that cricket has been played at Winchester College since the 17th century, and the present headmaster, Tim Hands, is keen on the game and on furthering links with the Hampshire Club.
Care homes join together for charity fete. Two Winchester care homes came together for a summer fete in aid of a charity that supports elderly people in the area. Abbots Barton and St Catherine's View, who are both owned by Colton Care, jointly raised £1,020 for MHA Communities Winchester. The charity provides social events and activities for around 350 older people across Winchester who live in their own homes and may be experiencing feelings of isolation or loneliness. Activities include exercise classes, lunch clubs, singing, drama, day trips and holidays. Even before the fete, the care homes had raised more than £1,800 for the charity, despite community events being constrained by lockdown. The summer fete was held on the green in Dyson Drive off Worthy Road, close to Abbots Barton. It featured live music, children's games, hot food, cakes, tombola and a sale of plants arranged by residents of both homes. Abbots Barton home manager Dee Lovewell said, "Getting involved in fundraising and events such as the fete enables our residents to continue to play a part in the wider community. They love it." Abbots Barton resident Rosemary Smale said, "We were very lucky with the weather as it was nice and sunny. I enjoyed having a look at the stalls. There was a good variety." Among the guests at the fete was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Aqual, who said, "It was a pleasure to be invited along to the joint family day for St Catherine's View and Abbots Barton care homes. There was a great turnout and the stalls were lovely." And of course that is accompanied by a picture of Fate Goes on the green with the stalls in the background.
Dentist honoured. A former dentist at Winchester Prison was presented with an award for services to the community in a ceremony earlier this month. John Ead was awarded the High Sheriff's Award by Sarah LeMay, the High Sheriff of Hampshire. John served as the appointed dentist to HMP Winchester for 20 years and took a deep interest in the prisoners, and his commitment to their dental and pastoral needs were very much appreciated by staff and inmates. Upon retirement, John trained as an advisor with Citizens Advice Bureau, where he returned to the prison and provided advice and support to many prisoners. John actively supports his wife Patsy, who for the past 11 years has organised provisions and staffing for the prison tea bar, where prisoners and their families can enjoy drinks and refreshments. He often steps in at short notice to cover for a volunteer unable to attend. For many years, John was chairman of the King Alfred's Boys Club and has also served as a past president of Winchester Rotary Club, where he has been a member for nearly 40 years.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Barbara Kearns.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead.